Welcome to Top M&A Entrepreneurs. Today, my guest is Renan Cortez. He's a 12-year Army veteran. He bought Restore Pro back in January 2023. It's an $8 million business, 100% seller financing. He's now known as the Unicorn Guy, and he's going to explain that. And now he's raising a fund called the Syndicate Venture Group to buy more stuff. Welcome to the show, Renan.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
All right.
Yeah, weird to be called the unicorn guy, but it is. It's a unicorn deal. It's not something you really base a business model off of, but it's something that happened, and it's launched me into outer space in a good way.
That's crazy. And I want to hear how this came about. So tell me about this story. Now, what were you doing before you started looking for businesses to buy?
Yeah. So like you said, I was 12 years in the military. I was a combat medic, you know, infantry medic, sleeping in the mud, rain, all that good stuff out of Fort Lewis. Became a cardiology specialist through the military. And after 12 years, got out and used that cardiology background to become a pacemaker rep with Medtronic, Abbott. So I did another 15 or 16 years in corporate America, Fortune 100, Fortune 500 companies, did some medical startups. And it was some of the best and worst times of my life, you know? I don't come from that pedigree. I don't come from that world. And I thought I had done it, right? Corporate America, this is me, six figures, I'm doing it. And then it cost me my health, my weight, my mental. And, you know, I just kind of, I went off the rails. And so I started hearing about, you know, starting your own business or just getting that financial freedom. And I was trying to find the path that was best for me. I tried opening up my own cannabis facility in Puerto Rico, failed at that. But the silver lining is I met Cody Sanchez and got into the unconventional acquisitions group community. And I started hearing about all these things about people buying businesses. And at the young age of 45 years old, I changed my whole mindset on things and sought to buy a business. So that's how my journey has gone. And now we could start talking about that, you know?
Yeah. So I got to circle back. I met Cody Sanchez 5-6 years ago. I pitched her a cannabis deal to her private equity fund, and she passed on. She says, it's not there. I go, Cody, it's doing $8 million and $3 million bottom line. What? It wasn't a cannabis deal. It was a manufacturing that built machines that processed the cannabis.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she passed on
integrated. I was going to manufacture, grow, dispense, you know, just have a dispensary. It was a really thought out, well thought out model. And it was actually, I used my GI Bill to get my MBA, University of Maryland. And my entrepreneurship professor told me, go reach out to Cody Sanchez. She has a cannabis fund and all this. And so that's how I ended up in her ecosystem. And through that, I just met some really, you know, like you said, you get in the room that you're supposed to be in or that you want to be in. And you start hearing these wild, different strategies for financial freedom, how to make money, how to be successful at life. And after 3 years, I scrapped the cannabis thing and sought out to buy a business.
Like you and 100,000 other people, forget that cannabis. It's like, not federally approved. It's hard to get funding, hard to raise money for it. You can't move money across state lines still. So, like, it's too difficult. Just move on.
Yeah. So now I'm in her cohort. I'm in her community and I'm listening to a lot of people. I'm looking at the simple things that everybody looks for in the beginning. I want a laundromat. I want a car wash. I want, you know, all the things, right? I was looking at frozen yogurt. I was looking at a dry cleaner. I got SBA approved for a dry cleaner. It was $700,000 a deal. It came with real estate. Top line, $600,000, and after debt service, net, it would clear $230,000.
Was that way? You were looking at that before COVID or after COVID?
It was after COVID.
Oh, it was after COVID.
It was after COVID.
Because
I
had a buddy that bought one of these and took it in the shorts during COVID. He's now a W-2 employee at another company. So.
Yeah, this is post-COVID, and the reason I like this one so much is because it's in a very affluent area in New Jersey. And COVID really didn't touch it because it wasn't the business suits or the working uniforms that they were dry cleaning. It was the housewife's cashmere. It was things, you know, the linens from the house, and that stuff didn't stop. If anything, it kind of increased. So they were a rock solid through the entire. So it was a really good business. The only reason I didn't do that is because in the meantime, I hired a virtual assistant group, and they would do cold calling on my behalf to find businesses off market deals for me. And my deal box was $500,000 EBITDA. service-based business, recession-resistant in New Jersey. I live in New Jersey, so New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, Maryland area. And one of the first things they found was this big business, $2 million in EBITDA, $8 million acquisition. I'm like, what are you guys doing? I have dry cleaner money. I don't have, you know, money to buy an $8 million business. But curiosity got me. I said, hey, let me take a look at this. If I want to see what doing diligence on a big business looks like.
Oh, get the reps in.
You know, I want to see what that looks like. And I went in. I saw the profit margins were strong. I saw opportunity up, down, left, and right. And then I kind of fell in love with the whole premise. And I was like, how do I take down this company? So it's going to be either I raise funds or do something.
So let me stop you right there because I want to find out. So your virtual assistant's reaching out. She's asking these guys questions. Hey, are you interested in selling? And the guy says yes. So great. I'll set up a call with you and the buyer. And then what do you do? What are you asking him? Like, why are you selling? What's the reason?
Well, in the very beginning, in all honesty, so my 15, 16 years in corporate, I was sales and I was a sales coach. Okay. And I went all the way up to strategy and all that. So there isn't going to be a hard push on the very first phone call. Very first phone call, we're just learning each other, you know, learning how to pronounce each other's names and where are you? So are you thinking about selling? What has your business been up to? Or, you know, what does the future look for you? Who am I? Where do I come from? And then if that vibe is good, then it's like, hey, you know what? This is kind of cool. I could do business with you. Let's grab coffee and talk about this further. Let's get offline, meet in person. And so then that was the next step. So now we're sitting there talking. And then once again, I'm picking his brain. Why are you selling? What are you looking to achieve? What do you want to do?
So let me go back to the VA. How many phone calls did they make and how long did that take?
They probably made, 50 to 100 phone calls. They say per day, but I don't know. I don't have the actual metrics on how much they did. But I will say after the first 2 weeks, I had 7 tangible targets, like real meaty targets. At the end of 3 months, I had 55 off-market listings, hot leads.
Make conversations with to start with. Yeah.
And so it kind of, as everything unfolded, I didn't even need to go past the first one because the first one is the one I took down. And so all the others kind of got stale because it took me, like 4, 5, 6 months to do the deal. And I don't want to, just have too much information coming in at the same time. So I just concentrated on the one deal. And we were successful. So,
Yeah. I would just try to, if any of my listeners heard that, it goes, can I set my expectations of what that looked like? I mean, to me, that sounds a little, 2 weeks, a couple of weeks, that's kind of crazy, but could happen. Yeah.
No, yeah. 2 weeks, like I said, 1 to 5, it was about 5 listings after the first 2 weeks. And then, after 3 months, 55. So it's a VA service that I use and I kept in touch with them for the last year and a half. And he's doing good work for a lot of other people as well.
What's the name of it? Because I know people want to hear it and we'll just get it.
No, his name is David Collinson. Dave Collinson. I could share his link. You could put the link there. I get absolutely nothing for that. It's just I truly believe in what his services do and what he does. Now, he won't close the deal for you. He's not a broker. It's not like that. He's purely he's really good at having that interview with you, finding out what you want. He manages your expectations. He's agnostic to any business sector. So if you want like a sewing business, he'll go look for it. He has a team in the Philippines that expertly trained. He's been doing this for years and he has really good success. There's a lot of business that we work together on. He still looks for off-market deals for me, but I highly recommend his services.
Yeah. So let's get back to your story. Arrange a meeting with this guy. You meet at a coffee shop or some neutral location. And you're just trying to develop a relationship.
That's it. Develop a relationship. Why do you want to sell? He's late 40s or a brother is early 50s. So the thing is that they've been entrepreneurs their whole life. They have multiple businesses and they wanted to buy back their time. So they wanted to sell one of their assets. That was the biggest time suck. And this is not a knock on them by no means, right? But the thing was, the reason it was a time suck is because they were running it very, very inefficient. They had like folders for each job all over nothing was cloud-based, nothing was centralized. It's the old adage, you find a business that's operating on a fax machine, you implement a computer, profits go up 30%, right?
Yeah.
So like their accounts receivables. I remember this, like, it was so weird. 9,500 rows of accounts receivables on one continuous Excel spreadsheet. So that's the kind of operation. So that's why it was a lot of time to maintain.
They didn't know that there was software out there for that.
See, that's what I'm saying. I don't want to make it. My thing is, I know that they probably hear me talk about this on podcasts or whatever. So it's not the me.
I'm not. You're not griping on these guys.
It is what it is. You know, some people, they were making a lot of money in spite of the processes that they had put in there. I come from, you know, like 15, 16 years corporate. I've worked with all the, you know, the CRMs and the systems, and I've seen how things can go. So immediately I was like, we could make this super efficient. And that's what I'm basing my entire fund on.
Yeah.
Cause, you know, so the whole story goes, I buy this business for $8 million, 100% seller financing. And we could go into the details on that. Like how did I get?
Yeah. Let's do this. Yeah. Let's, cause a lot of the people that watch this show goes, oh my God, you know, things are going to happen. They get impatient, right? No, there's a process of developing a relationship to make sure that they want to sell, you know, peers sell to peers, right? They want to make sure you're confident that you can run the business. I'm going to sell to you and build the developer. Yes. I trust Renan Cortez before I'm going to sell it to him.
Yeah. That's exactly where that's the point I want to drive home, because this past year, a lot of people reach out and they say, look, I have this deal on the hook, but they don't want to give me seller financing. What words do I use to make them? First of all, you're not going to make anybody do anything. That's not how this works. And the other thing is, and I really try to manage expectations. You're not going to do this. You know, the chances of success are not like through the roof. You know, I actually had to put out like a public service announcement. You know, I talk a lot about the 8 million business that I took down, but I don't talk about the 20 businesses that I couldn't get off the ground with that kind of structure. There were a lot of no's that I had to go through to get to that. There were a lot of off market, on market, a lot of no's. So that's where I refined this whole thing on what drives the person to sell. And what it comes down to is, if you show them that by holding the note, they get to amortize their payment. So they're not getting a lump sum, 8 million, where the IRS is going to come and take 37% or 35%, wherever you live. You get to manage it in manageable chunks over 5, 10, 15
years. Yeah, it's an installment plan. It's just to get the you know, full amount of the sale, the payment, but it's in over installments.
That's right. And then on top of
that, IRS includes that as a lower capital gains versus ordinary income.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And then on top of that, I tell them, I'm not paying you 8 million for your business. I'm actually paying you 11.8. And they kind of look and say, because you're getting interest payments. I'm not paying JP Morgan. I'm not paying Bank of America or Live Oak that interest payment. I'm paying you the interest payment. So amortized over 12 years at 7%, that's an additional 3.8 million that you're getting on top of the 8 million purchase price. That's when it, and then it going back to your earlier point, the two questions I had for them after I presented that and everything, I was like, do you think your company is strong enough? The cash flows are strong enough to support that debt service. And of course, they're like, yeah, it's like 40% margins, you know, EBITDA margins. You're right. Absolutely. And two, do you think I could do this? Do you think I'm going to fail? Or they're like, no, because now we're 2.5 months into this. They know my track history. They know what I've done in the military. They know what I've done in corporate America. They get a feel for me as a father, a husband, my family life, what my intent is with the company. They feel like, you know, I'm the guy that could do this. So they're like, yeah, you could run this business. You're not going to fail at this. So basically, you know, by doing no down payment and doing this deal, I'm paying you 3.8 million for taking a risk on this whole situation. Now we're a year and a month into it, and we're doing just fine. Everything's good. Yeah. You know,
let me ask you that, when you first presented to him, did you originally think, I'll just take this down with an SBA loan? Cause it's definitely eligible. Were you eligible and you didn't go that direction, or?
Well, it's kind of tough because it was 8 million. So it would have been a hybrid type deal, you know, cause SBA only goes up to 5 million, but there's ways to do that. You still need to come in with a pretty good down payment, you know, to kind of de-risk it for the banks. And, you know, a lot of banks were saying, no, this, you know, you need like $1.4 or $2 million down payment, and then you can leverage the rest. So we didn't really have those discussions. Anytime we approached the discussion, okay, so how much or how are you going to finance this? the first month, I always pushed back. I'm like, look, to be honest, I don't even know if I want this yet. Let's keep doing diligence. Once I get very comfortable with the financials, with the structure, with the business in general, then we could talk about how are we going to do this together. And that was just all me just building the relationship. That's all it was.
Yeah. And you, when you asked for the financial report cards, the income statements, 3 to 5 years, balance sheets, cash flow statements, they were receptive to that. They were ready to put it in a data room, give it to you. Okay. Yep.
We did NDA and we just from day one started sharing information. It was not a problem. Yeah.
Now, why did they go? Let's go back to the why did they sell? This one caused them the most time. Was their other business making more money or taking less time? Is that what I'm going to?
The other businesses took less time from them. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have real estate. They have a couple franchises. They, they have a labor division. So those were infinitely less time intensive than what this is. So in their minds, if they could get a good consistent payment or one big payment for this and just kind of put it in real estate or other ventures, that would, they just bought back, 12 hours of their day.
Yeah. How did you, what kind of questions you ask them to understand, a seller finance, 100% seller finance a deal was really better for them than doing SBA, about what their needs were, hey man, you're going to get like $11 million in an installment plan over, what was the term of the loan?
Or it's the 7% over 12 years.
12 years. Okay.
Yeah.
Who made that up? 12 years.
So there's another thing that I have, and Aubrey will tell you about it. I call it the dumb calculator, right? So it's basically this Excel spreadsheet that I put together. It's real simple. It's basically a payment function. And what I have built in, there's three variables that I look at. How much am I going to acquire a business for? What is the net profit that I could expect from it? And what are the financing terms, right? If I plug all that in, it'll tell me what my net looks like. And that'll get me to the second point of, do I even want to do the deal? Or is this going to be too tight? So this one had a lot of meat on the bone. And so when I took that and I added an amortization table to it, now I have this thing that I could show them. We sat down at the coffee shop, sat down at the diner, and I was like, hey, look, I want to buy this business. I'm getting pushback from the bank because they say I need like $1.5 million to put down and I don't have that. And so, of course, the immediate reaction, a little bit of disappointment, like, oh, man, did we just waste the last month and a half, 2 months? I'm like, no, absolutely not. I'm just telling you, I'm just sharing what I'm finding. I find that I really like this business. You have a strong business model going on. We're going to do a quality of earnings. Now let's figure out how can we do this? Well, if you say you don't have $1.5 million, how are we going to do this? Have you ever considered holding a note, being the bank? You're like, what are you talking about? Education. So that's where I go into educating them on, as long as we agree to terms. So they're like, okay, so I'm like, just humor me. Let's sit down and play with this. So we've changed the APRs, we changed the years, and then and this is something I put it at worst case scenario for me. Like I put it, we landed at 7% APR because this was a year and a half ago and SBA rates were going about 6.5. So part of my incentive.
Yikes, right?
Yeah. So part of my incentive was I'm going to go higher than SBA. So I'm going to give you 7% APR. He was like, okay. So we put it at 7%. I said, let's get you out in 5 years. Okay. We put it in 5 years. It calculates everything, and the net is $99,000. This is a $2 million EBITDA business, and it net $99,000. I'm like, there you go. And he goes, and this is, I love him for this. He's like, there's no way in my good conscience can I sell you this business with these terms and know that you're only making $100,000 because, if you just have the little bit of a hiccup or variance in cash flows, you're done. And then on top of that, he goes, I know that this business will bring in a little bit more than that. So, he has a good heart also. And I'm like, I'm glad you said that. I said, let's put it out to 20 years. He goes, well, I don't want to be on the hook for 20. I'm like, no, we're playing right now. Put it out to 20.
Yeah, I don't want to know if I want to be your friend for 20 years, right?
Well, that's the thing. But so we went all the way up to 20. And then it showed that it cleared 1.2, 1.3 million. And we're like, that's too long. Okay, I get it. So we went back to 7, 8, then we had landed at 12 years. And It was like the perfect point. 7% at 12 years. It cleared over $1 million. He had his debt service. It's like a monthly payment of $80,000. And it was like, okay. And then I said, here's the best part. give me 2 years. Because after 2 years, if you're really tired of holding the note, I could refinance this 100% from a bank. Because the number one question they're going to ask if I go to refinance, how long have you been in the business and are you profitable? If I've been profitable for 2 years, showing, you know, then they'll refinance. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, it's a piece of cake. Now, your balance sheet's a heck of a lot bigger today, you know, 2 years from now than it is today. It's like,
that's it.
Happy to do that.
Right now, it's kind of funny. I talk to branch managers and they're like, they're never going to refinance me out because the interest rates are too high. They're not going to ethically put me in a worse position than I'm in right now. But it's okay because they're fine with it. They're getting their payments. They've already told me, they said, look, if you ever think about refinancing, come to us first. We'll because
how much disclosure do you give them? They already know what the cash flow of the business is, everything. How much, you know, how many, what kind of eyeballs do you give them the business?
Quarterly financials.
Yeah.
We sit down, we do a quarterly meeting, we go over financials. This is showing the strength because the recourse here, and this is another thing, this is why it's another
unicorn. What is the
The recourse is if we can't make our payments and we take heroic measures, you know, like business loans or emergency loans, and we just can't keep it afloat, we give the keys back and we say, damn, sorry. You know, I mean, they've gotten a payment all the way. So it's not like they're not getting payments all the way through that. You know, I think last year they made $500,000 in interest alone.
So you would give the keybacks. Is there a term on that? Like 2 to 5 years of giving the keys back or at some point, you know?
No, that's part of our quarterly meeting. You know, it's the quarterly discussion of, are we doing good? Are we doing bad? And then it becomes a sense of, can they leverage any of their relationships to help our cash flow? And if it gets to the point where we just are, you know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, we cannot run this business, then we have to make the determination. But it's quite the opposite. We're actually doing very good. So thankfully we didn't have to have those conversations, but that is the recourse. It becomes an arbitration, you know, talking about the financials, you haven't been able to pay in X amount of months, and that's the doomsday scenario.
Yeah. Did they have a general manager running that business, or were they running it themselves?
It was them.
And what
they
do you do?
Operators.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you put somebody in place to run that, or are you running it?
I did. Yeah. No, I went back into my network, and there was a gentleman, Nick, that we got our MBA together, and I remember he was a controller for like $700 million construction company in the area. And so he knows this space. He knows the accounting, financials. He knows construction. And so I asked him, I said, hey, look, do you want to do this for real? Put our MBAs to work for real? He's like, hell yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
So he's now the CFO for the fund, and he's stepping out, and we have management in place in the company.
Yeah. Did he ask for any equity in the business?
I gave him 49%.
49%. Lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, I've heard a lot of, you know, criticisms. They're like, oh, you know, you gave too much equity. You did that. Well, you know what? I did what I felt was appropriate because that's the first time I ever took down a business. I trusted him. And that's how I show my trust and gratitude. I don't want there to ever be a rift on that. So the only reason I kept 51% is so I could throw veteran status onto the business. And
does that get you business being veteran status?
Set aside, okay. You know, there's a lot of set aside. There's a lot
of network. You're doing government contracting, so
GSA no bids. Yeah, there's a lot that we're going to do for that for sure.
Yeah, what is? I'm very curious. What does that look like? What's your commercial versus gov contract? What were they doing when they were running the business? What does it look like now? What's the split in customer concentration?
The split for them is 20% commercial, 80% residential. Uh-huh. Since I took it over and I've been looking at other businesses to add to the portfolio, I've really taken to the business philosophy of doing more commercial, right? Because commercial is less headaches. You know, it's not guaranteed money, but it's contracted money over 3 to 5 years. And we're talking about $1 million contracts. Residential, you're talking about 5,000, 10,000, you're in, you're out 2 days. You're doing about 40 to 50 jobs a month versus 4 big ones in a year, you know? So I'm gravitating more towards commercial. So now we're looking at 30 to 40% commercial, the rest residential, and we're finalizing our GSA no bid contracts now. It took almost a year to get that done.
But yeah,
we're finalizing all that stuff now.
Yeah. It sounds to me like this Restore Pro is definitely higher than the average United States average
of what?
Of revenue.
Yeah, for restoration companies.
Yeah.
So it's the weird, there's probably 20% market share that belongs to the big boys in this industry. 80% is all mom and pop. And out of the mom and pop, I would say that Restore Pro was on the higher level of that. It really was. Because a lot of the ones that I've been to, Florida, California, Seattle, you know, I'm looking nationally, and it's really good profit margins. But unless they're organized in a way, you rarely see like bigger businesses. You know, they just kind of
stagnate. Hit $6 million in revenue.
So that's why I see the opportunity of
Congress. That's not what the franchise sells it at. They sell it like at about $1 million. That's what you'll see. Yeah. And, but it's a 50% net, which is what they brag about too. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Interesting. So you're doing this 1 year, 1 month later. Now, when did you launch the fund? Syndicate Venture Group. And now you're doing a roadshow to raise capital to buy a company.
Yeah. So once we were able to take down that deal, I was like, hey, we just took down an $8 million business with no money. It's not a repeatable, model.
Yeah.
You know, because people are like, why don't you just keep doing that? Well, it's not repeatable. It's not. It's a unicorn thing. It's going to possibly could do it, but I don't want to predicate a business model on it. So I figured if I could raise capital and put down 30% and get the rest seller financed, I'm in business. And sure enough, that's what we're doing. So I started I actually started Syndicate Venture Group in 21. Just as a holding company, just to write off the expenses of looking for businesses and stuff, right? That was my LLC, taking losses the first year and a half. But now it's turning into a holding company and a Reg B 506C, where we're raising $100 million to acquire more businesses.
All right. Yeah. So those are big check writers. Mm-hmm. And you say, where do we find $100 million? Because maybe these guys are going to write checks for $5 million to $10 million, something like that. And you go out and you start talking to private equity, maybe some hedge funds, maybe some family offices, wealthy investors.
Yep.
What's the reaction? What do you do?
So in order, I'm going to backtrack just a little bit. In order to prepare for all that, I enrolled in Columbia Business School for private equity and venture capital. So I'm in New York City now, and I'm learning from Columbia professors, you know, learning Warren Buffett value investing. I'm in the same room as other high-level fund managers and GPs, and I'm really in it. And I put this thesis together and I show it to my classmates. I show it to the professors and they're like, yeah, you're building a baby Berkshire Hathaway. It's almost kind of like a common sense model. I'm like, so I was validated there. And then I'm like, well, if this is that, how come not everybody's doing it? And they're like, well, there are a lot of people doing it, but people get attracted to AI, you know, all the sexy stuff, you know,
cybersecurity.
Yeah, the stuff that's going to get you 100x return on your money, which is cool. Yeah. There's definitely a place for that. But I'm trying to hit singles and doubles. I'm trying to get 90% consistent revenues coming through the door. And so we're doing the service-based roll-up. That's now I prepared myself there so that I could get the fundamental, the infrastructure, the thesis built up. Now it's time to go on the roadshow. And I came across through my network, Family Office Club, Richard C. Wilson.
He's in Florida. I know him well. He's got big. Yep.
So I go to the very first one in Los Angeles earlier last year in, I think it was March. And it was just his investor summit. I go down there not knowing anything about anything. I just want to take it in because once again, be in the room, right? Take action, be in the room, and then you'll just learn. You'll get. After the third day there, Richard Wilson's like, there's two people here that are going to be wildly successful, and you're one of them, with or without us. So he's like, congratulations on that. And because of that, you know, I was able to become, you know, get into their network, meet a ton of people through that network. I've had an exhibit booth there. And fast forward a year later, through Family Office Club, I met a group where we're talking about $110 million commitment. You know, we're doing all the finalizing of the paperwork now. We've already been approved for $17.5 million from another group that specializes in emerging managers. So they're anchoring our fund at 17.5, and we're finalizing the paperwork on that. You know, they've already signed subscription. We're just transferring funds right now. So once again, it's not quick. And I never thought, I was like, when is this going to happen? And I'm still kind of feeling that way because until I see it in the account, I'm still like, I'm waiting.
Dude. From but Army medic to, you know, doing this. This is like the Patrick Beck David story, man.
It's been wild. And that's what I'm saying. That's why, you know, I sit with Aubrey we were down there in Austin.
Oh, by the way, that wasn't when we talked about Aubrey Arias. It wasn't being recorded, so we're talking about a mutual buddy of ours.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. So we're down there in Austin, and the thing that it's kind of weird about what I'm doing, it's not classic venture capital, it's not classic private equity, it's more of a hybrid. So I'm sitting there with Aubrey, and we came up with this thing, venture equity, because it's a hybrid of both. There is something called venture equity, but we're going to call this venture equity 2.0. But it has the best pieces of both, I believe, in the offering. And once I explain it to investors, they're like, oh, wow, yes, we want in all of this. Let's go. So it's a cool thing.
Yeah, let me kind of recircle back to something where you're talking about sexy and stuff. When you offered $11 million over 12 years, that's a 5.5x on the EBITDA, by the way.
It's a 4x. That's what we agreed to the acquisition. $8 million at it's a 4x multiple of 2. But once you amortize it, include the interest payments. Yes, 11.8. Yes,
yeah,
that's exactly right. Yes,
yeah. So let me go back to the you got a 506B, which allows you 50 investors at
506C.
Oh, 506C, yeah,
which allows me to publicly market the offering.
General solicitation.
That's right. Because a year ago, I had zero for ultra high net worth or any high net worth people in my circle. It was like me and a couple of jiu-jitsu guys. And, I didn't have that high net worth network. So I had to market. I have to be able to put it on social media. I have to put it on whatever outlet. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm raising X checks. Minimum check size is X amount. What now is that when they say committed, we're going to commit $17 million. Are they they're actually putting money in your bank, or are they saying, when you get the deal, we're going to syndicate it?
So the 17 point originally it was, once you commit, you're putting the money in because I have another 30 million in businesses that I'm taking down over the next quarter. And so it's going to be deployed right then and there. So there is no capital call, right?
Yeah.
But now that we're in the realm of this $110 million play, that's going to be where it's committed. And once we have the deal, then we'll do a capital call. But for the first 20 to 30 million, it's going to be immediate transfer of funds.
Yeah. And now you're going back to David Tomlinson with this VA and goes, hey, I'm not looking for these SMBs anymore because it doesn't move the needle. I'm looking for what? Minimum 2 million net?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking at 2 to 8 million EBITDA. I'm looking for bigger, so typical acquisition from now on is going to be anywhere between 15 to 30 million. I just signed an NDA for another business. This is a big one. It's a holding company of itself over on the West Coast. And it's going for $130 million. And
they selling?
It's a holding company that they're looking to exit.
Oh, okay.
That's really what it is. So it came across my radar. I've been fortunate now to be on podcasts and just get the word out so people know what I'm looking for. And so I get a lot of incoming deals. And so this one actually piqued my interest because my final goal is to get to $100 million EBITDA across the portfolio. So we could exit 15 to 20x multiple. So that's a 1.5 to 2 billion dollar exit. Yeah.
Let me ask you that, or may bring a point though, because if you have a Restore Pro and then you buy a completely different business, it may add onto the cash flow, but it doesn't give you the unique advantages of buying another Restore Pro and adding to the multiple because you have more cash flow.
Oh, it's all within the same niche. They're all capital improvement restoration companies. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That will change your multiples. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. It was like, I did an interview with Walker Diebel, and he said that one of the biggest mistakes he's made over the last couple of years is buying different businesses in different niches. It doesn't add to the multiples.
I got to sit right next to him at one of Cody's masterminds. I had his book. It was crazy to meet him in person. And, we had that conversation about the $8 million deal that I did and all that. But that's where
we'll call Walker Diebel, buy then hold great hair guy.
But that's what formed, because originally I was all over the place. I was like, yeah, electrical, HVAC, this. But now I'm really niching into capital improvements, restoration, reconstruction niche, because there's so much opportunity. Like I said, there's only 20% of the market held by the big companies, 80% is wide open.
Yeah.
So I'm going to aggregate a lot of these companies, bring it into the portfolio, economies of scale, shared services, And
so you got to up level a lot of things, like your legal, your accounting. What did you do there? I mean, did you go, hey, you're a great accountant, appreciate this, but we're moving to $120 million business. I need, you know, one of the big accounting firms.
So, yeah. And once again, being in the room. So now I'm in Family Office Club. Richard Wilson and his staff, I have an exhibit booth, and they strategically placed my booth next to another booth that was bringing in a lot of attention. So the guy there, he's like, so what do you have going on here? I'm like, we're buying businesses. What's your name? He goes, I'm Joe Williams. We're doing a big real estate fund and everything. I'm like, real estate? Nah. He goes, it's
right
going to
be fine. Yeah.
Definitely. He's like, it's going to be fine. I'm like, yeah, I get it. You know, he goes, no, it's going to be fine. I'm like, okay. He goes, I'm Joe Williams. I'm like, I get it. So he walks away. The other guy at his booth is laughing at me. He goes, you don't know who he is, do you? I'm like, he's Joe Williams. He goes, yeah, you ever heard of Keller Williams? I was like, oh.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I was like, yeah. He's like, he's the Williams.
Like, Williams. Have you ever heard of Cortez?
So I was super embarrassed. But now the guy that's like laughing at me, he's like, what's your story, kid? You know, what's going on here? So this is an event we're doing in Brooklyn. All right. And he's like, what's your story? So I tell him I'm doing this fund. I was in New York. He goes, where in New York? You know, Queens. I leave for the Army. And it turns out this guy grew up three blocks from me. His name is Harry Dublinsky. And he's like, look at us, two Queens kids sitting here in a suit in Brooklyn at this wonderful, you know. But Harry has been in private equity for about 35 to 45 years. Like, he hangs out with the mayor, the Governor Hochul, and he's big time private equity. He's like, look, here's my card. Let's talk. I want to see how we can help each other. Cool. So fast forward, I actually called him. Long story short, he does the fund administration for Joe Williams and that fund. And he's also doing the fund administration for us, because he's like, you're an emerging manager. If people are wondering who's doing your fund administration, it can't be, you know, Joe Blow down the block. It has to be somebody reputable. So he's handling the fund administration, the books, just everything. We actually have a strategy meeting on that tomorrow, where we're using AppFolio for all the administration. I'm moving away from the system I'm using. Anyway, so he's guiding us in that way. And the only reason I even got to meet him is because I was in the room.
Yeah.
You know, the Family Office Club room. It really.
You're sitting next to Keller Williams, the Williams of Keller Williams.
I know. It's crazy. I was so embarrassed.
Yeah. What about your legal team? Is that the same thing? You had to up level on that too?
So legal team, not yet. Legal team, you know, there's a group that I'm using that they're in like the Grant Cardone circle. So within my network, I'm a part of GoBundance also. That happened last year. So
you're part of who?
It's a network called GoBundance.
Oh, GoBundance. Yeah.
Yeah. So David Osborne is one of the founders there. You know, they're a big Keller Williams. You know, it's mainly real estate, but it's all walks of life. And it's a really cool group to be part of. But within that network, one of the guys there said, hey, you know, here's an SEC lawyer that you could talk to. So, you know, SEC lawyer is good. Mergers and acquisition attorney is fantastic. He worked for one of the top 20 firms. And I met him through unconventional acquisition. So it's all the networks that I've been part of that I'm, you know, I didn't get in the Yellow Pages or. Well, that's an old thing to say, Yellow Pages. You know, I didn't get online. I didn't do all that, right?
Renan, you're like, I don't know anybody today knows what that is anymore.
Yeah, I just said Yellow. Yeah. So I didn't get online. I didn't search for it. It was all recommended by, you know, a network of people that I trust. And so meaning that's how I built it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you connected with JT Fox?
No.
Yeah. He's got a great network of investors.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a way to do that if you're still raising money, that is, unless you're over not committed 100%.
So, like I said, you know, we'll see how that goes, you know, because, you know, the way the vision is going, 100 million, we set it because that seemed to be a good round number, a respectable number. We do see ourselves in about 3 to 5 years doing a half a billion or $1 billion fund for the assets we're bringing in.
Yeah. So what are you offering investors? What do they get? They put in money for 3 to 5 years. And what are your, like, participating preferred, some kind of step up?
So I kept it very simple because I didn't want all these, you know, really crazy waterfalls and anything. It's a very simple structure. The first 10 million, because I needed to incentivize people to invest because I'm an emerging manager, you know, no track record. But they get a 10% preferred return from day one based on the invested capital. So you put $1 million in, you're getting $100,000 a year paid quarterly from day one because I'm buying businesses that have strong cash flows.
You get $100,000 a year paid quarterly. Okay.
Yes.
So yeah, $25,000.
It's based on whatever you invest. So whatever you invest, it's going to be 10% of that you're getting back paid quarterly.
Okay.
So that way you start getting that. And then when we have an exit event or refinance event or whatever, when we exit the asset, they're part of the 75% LP pool. So they get 75% of that, and the other 25% goes to the GP or the fund management. And the way that works out, we put a lot of did a lot of models. It turns out to be like a 35% to 45% IRR and a multiple of invested capital of like 3 to 3.5. So it's a very strong model.
This is something I need to bring it to your attention because if you get on SearchFunder and a lot of these guys are looking for investors, and they go seeking these very sophisticated, like vulture capitalist kind of ventures with the waterfalls and the 30% IRRs requirements. But they want to buy this $2 million HVAC that's only growing 5 to 10% a year. That small thinking, that's not going to happen. You're not going to be able to get somebody 30%.
Right.
You've got to grow organically and through acquisition faster.
That's right. And I've been actually spanked by some of the family office guys. Because I show them the model that I have, and I'm like, we could hit 30% easily. They say, okay, but on your PPM, on your marketing materials, 18 to 22. Don't go higher than that on what you're telling investors. I'm like, what? They're like, look, if you, let's say, say you promote 35% IRR and you come in at 32%, is that good? I'm like, 32% is fantastic. No, you failed. Because you said 35. Failed.
You see what happens to stock markets that even Apple, if you don't ship enough iPods or iPad. Yeah.
That's exactly right. So, but if you say 18 to 22 and you get that 32% IRR, you're a rock star and people will just invest and write those checks because you're giving a really good return. So on our documentation, we show 18 to 22% and a 2x multiple of invested capital at the end. But the real deal on the back end, it's a lot stronger than that. And It's an exciting model.
Yeah, which means you have to grow your cash flow by what per year if you did it backwards. So,
yep.
Yeah.
We don't say that we're going to double our revenues or our EBITDA. So we usually give, if we add 50% to that and then we get a higher multiple, that's where the exponential, it's multiple arbitrage. That's where that comes into.
Right.
And I give a bad, better, and best scenario. Like if I don't grow it one penny from when I acquire, but I do all these things, I put management in, I put efficiencies, SOPs, EOS, all that good stuff, and we sell it at a higher multiple, this is how we win. If we sell it at a higher multiple and a moderately higher EBITDA, maybe another 500,000, this is how it shakes out. And if we really do well and we get another million or 2 million in EBITDA at a higher multiple, this is when we're doing like 45% IRR and really returning, the big
money. Yeah, you're going up the multiple pyramid. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right. So, yeah. And then especially growth by acquisition, we get some of this private equity money, and now we have these other assets, and we have shared back office, shared estimating services, and now, the California asset now has a Restore Pro attached to it. There's a lot of things that we could do to make this a national presence. And then
what kind of challenges have been in your face? Like, hey, like you, forces of the universe going, I don't want you to do this, Reno.
No, it's actually the opposite. And it's, and I've been told this and I'm feeling it also. Our biggest worry is growing too fast because the opportunity is there. We could just go out and just go crazy and start doing this, but we have to do it responsibly. We can't get too big too fast because then that's when it falls off the rails also. So I'm putting together
getting in front of your skis.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly that. That is the biggest challenge right now. Getting too big, too fast. It sounds like it's a good problem. It kind of is, but that could hurt you just as bad as not having enough business,
Yeah. Who have you put in your kind of mastermind, Napoleon Hill mastermind group together?
So I have a chief operating officer, a CFO, a director of strategy, chief compliance officer, and an executive assistant. So there's six of us, right now in the C-suite, and we're looking to build around them.
Yeah. And what do you do when you feel like your ego's getting too big?
My
checks
ego?
When you're, you checks you can't write. Let me give you an example. I just mentioned this earlier. I had an old, a friend who was Bob Bro. He had Bro Research Corporation. He used to fly F-100s in Vietnam. But he started writing checks his body couldn't cash as far as the business going. And I just got the bankruptcy check that where he owed money. It's $20 of the thousands he owed me. It's only worth $20 right now. So his ego got too big, right? There's old pilots, there's bold pilots, and then there's no old bold pilots, right?
Well, and it's a weird thing. So one of the reasons Richard C. Wilson kind of gravitates toward me and to a lot of the people that's in his ecosystem, and it's a weird thing, martial arts, high-level martial arts, that'll humble the hell out of a human being. So I've been doing jiu-jitsu for 18 years. I honestly don't think I have that ego because I go and I get my butt smashed. You know, I get put in, you know, I tap constantly. It's, you have to check your ego at the door. You truly do in order to do this. So the people that are around me, you know, they know I don't have, I actually place them higher than I place myself. And that's just something that I intrinsically do.
And what is that, spirituality from religion or just
I think
Buddha
just from,
or what? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where that comes from. It's just in order to be successful, you have to learn how to fail over and over and over again. And so I've done that in corporate and jiu-jitsu and just a lot of aspects of my life. So I don't want to ever get, like you said, you know, get ahead of my skis. And that's how I keep myself in check. And I also surround myself with people that, because I am pie in the sky. I'm very optimistic. I'm like, oh, this is what we can do. I surround myself, like my CFO, he's very, no, we don't have the money. We don't have this. We can't do this. So that's how we even each other out. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever watched that movie about Howard Hughes in where, what's his name?
Who's the aviator?
Aviator. When he's just like sitting there and the CFO says, we don't have the money. Bye. You're like, buy it.
Yeah.
And he turns out to be one of the first billionaires in the United States.
So, you know, I'm the vision guy. And then I have people that kind of ground me and then say, okay, this is what we could really realistically do. And then, you know, that to me is what makes a good team.
Yeah.
You know,
what about your wife? Is she like a biggest cheerleader or critic
She is my ride or die, man. She supported me when I was in the military and I was getting, you know, change of duty station, deployed and all that stuff. So she handled the home then. Corporate America, when I'm out there doing the dinners and wining and dining and business things. So she is, a huge support system.
It's kind of funny, but like my daughter is like 16. We've lived here in Tucson for all her life. And I go, well, and she says, like, complaining she doesn't have any friends. I go, well, Jesus, try being a kid of a dad that moves around every 2 years.
Yeah, exactly.
You say it's hi tough. And goodbye real fast. Yeah. You learn how to do that, right?
It's tough. But she's a strong support system. She is my biggest cheerleader. And I couldn't do any of this without that kind of support and understanding. Yeah.
I think that's just like the base, man. You have to have that pyramid built up of a great foundation. Yeah. Spirituality, you know, great friends, you know, minimal ego.
Yeah.
To put that in place.
Absolutely.
Renan, that's a great story. Fantastic. Hey. People reach out to you on LinkedIn.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, our website is syndicateventuregrouppe.com, right? Or svgpe.com for short. We have that domain through there. You know, the socials are there. I'm Renan Cortez on LinkedIn. You'll see me, you know, one of the first people that pops up. Renan isn't a very common name here, right?
Where's that name from?
What's that?
Where's that name from?
It was my dad's name, actually, and he's from the Philippines.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So I heard that it's like French origin, but, you know, because they were colonized by France and Spain and, you know, so I have all kinds. My 23andMe is ridiculous. I have all kinds of stuff floating around.
We're a mutts. We're all mutts.
But you know, Renan Cortez on LinkedIn or our website. And yeah, I do like to meet people, you know, through outreach and stuff like that.
That's your network. Part of what I do. Is your net worth, which is exactly. Obviously on display right here on this interview.
That's it.
Right here.
That's exactly right.
All right. Renan, This is fantastic. And if you guys like this show, make sure you subscribe to it. Thanks.
Hey.
Hold on. Let me. Okay.
I hope this video has inspired you. If you need help buying your first $1 million business, make sure to visit me at dealflowsystem.net. If you like this video, make sure you subscribe down below. Comment on it, share it, tell everyone about it. And thanks for watching.